Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of informing and motivating listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 5 regional stations, as well as 4 additional stations in Virginia. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. We sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support of any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support us in this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale.
Go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donate button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking today with Dr. Stephen Vrabel. Vrabel is a board-certified physician. We're talking about this question about whether or not we should be vaccinated, what the vaccination, the COVID-19 vaccination includes, and exactly what could be problematic in relationship to that. So, Dr. Grable, we were talking about just before the top of the hour news, you touched on the PCR test. I'm slightly familiar with that, but for the benefit and the edification of our audience, give us a little layman's insight, thumbnail, cliff notes, if you will, on what that means and why that is so important.
Sure. Well, PCR stands for polymerase chain reaction. And this test, the scientist who discovered this said that the test was never designed to be used in the way that we're doing it.
Right.
And what the test does is everybody has little pieces of DNA or RNA, which are little pieces of DNA. Let's just keep it simple, in your body. And in theory, if you have a certain little segment of the RNA, which is in the COVID virus, they amplify this typically over 35 times in order to be able to measure it in the laboratory. Well, the dirty little secret about PCR testing is that if you keep amplifying, if you go up to 35 or 40 or 45 or 50 amplifications, close to 100% of people tested will test positive for whatever pathogen you're trying to look for. So then you ask yourself, wait a minute, how do we know it's reliable? And that's the big bugaboo. I have several studies showing that experts say that they believe the false positive rate is 50%. One top researcher felt it was as high as 90%. False positive means when you have a test that comes back positive, it is falsely positive. So right off the bat, we're dealing with a test which is fraught with inaccuracy. And in the vaccine studies, what they did was what's called their endpoint was one symptom plus a positive COVID test. Now, that symptom could be a runny nose, could be cough, could be fever, could be muscle pain. There are over 1,400 pathogens that can cause these symptoms. So they're trying to tease out something that they can use to impress the public. Okay, so now I'm going to go through some numbers here, and I know on the radio it's a little hard to follow, so I'll try to make this as simple as possible.
Do that. Thank you.
So Pfizer took 44,000 people approximately, which is a lot of people, right? And they split them in half and gave half the vaccine and half placebo. They then waited until they got 164, quote, cases of COVID. Now, they don't really tell us exactly what that means, but we're assuming it means one symptom and a positive COVID test. They found out that roughly 150 of the control people and 14 of the vaccine people became positive. And if you do the math, that translates to a 90% efficacy. Now, most people would say, wow, that's really good, 90% effective, okay? Well, stick with me. So there's a concept called absolute risk and relative risk. And it's very important for the public to understand this, not only with vaccines, but even drugs that you might receive. So let's say a company, you take 100 people, and two people normally get a disease out of that 100. Well, if you have a drug or a vaccine or a therapy that reduces that from 2 to 1, that is a 50% relative risk reduction, which sounds very impressive. But it is only a 1% relative risk reduction, which is actually quite small. So if you do the math with this, you'll find that the COVID attack rate in the vaccine group was 0.0004. But in the placebo group, it was 0.0043, which meant that the relative risk was 0.093, which is very, very small. And what this translates to, they have a concept called the number needed to treat to see an improvement. So given all these numbers I've been throwing out here, you have to vaccinate 256 people to prevent one positive COVID test by their definition. Now, in my opinion, that is very poor. And that ties in, and with the Moderna one, it turned out to be 167 people. So as you alluded to earlier, the question is, what is the safety of this vaccine? So what we're being told is we have this vaccine that will basically reduce COVID symptoms. We're not told that it would prevent hospitalization, would prevent death, would prevent even transmission of the virus. And those are things that people automatically assume when they hear these numbers like 90 and 95% thrown around. So what happens when this vaccine, using what's called messenger RNA, which is, think of it as just like a little piece of DNA. This, in theory, will be inserted into your genetic code.
Well, if I could stop you for just a moment for our listeners to understand that a little part of the RNA is literally taking a small part of the virus or its genetic information.
Correct. And that would get inserted into your DNA. And once that happens, that in theory will become a permanent part of your DNA.
So let's stop there just for a moment for our listeners to understand. And if I'm off target with my statement, now you correct me on this. From a layman's standpoint, the DNA, that DNA strand is what is the real me and the real you. Am I putting it layman terms correctly?
Correct. All right,
so if we take that DNA, the real me, the real you, and we insert what is called the RNA, which is a small part of the virus, into our genetic informational system, which is into our DNA. As a result of that, you're saying it permanently changes our DNA. In other words, that virus vaccination could change who the real me and the real you, if I can put it in the kind of elementary statement, it could permanently change the real you and the real me if we accept that vaccination. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And if you read Judy Mikovits, who is the brilliant virologist, I've read all three of her books. She has impeccable credentials. She's received a tremendous amount of criticism because she has stood up against the machine, if you will. She believes, and she has said this on more than one occasion, that she believes the vaccine is going to kill millions. Now, that's
I'm in agreement with that. In fact, I've made mention before to our listeners, and you perhaps are aware of it, on Bill Gates on the CNN interview back in, I believe it was September. He was talking about the future tense of the use of the Moderna. That's what he was talking about at the time, vaccination, not the Pfizer, but a vaccination, COVID vaccination nevertheless. And the question was asked to him by one of the Communist Network News commentators on CNN. would there be any harm or risk or danger? And with kind of a smirk on his face, he said, well, we could lose as many 750,000 to a million people as a result of it. They could die. But then he smiled further and he said, but what is that in comparison to the millions of people that we'll save as a result of it? That was the same mentality, Dr. Grable, that he used, as you are familiar with, in India and Nigeria and other parts of Africa, where under the pretense of giving a vaccination for polio, just about all, if not all, of the females were sterilized. Millions were paralyzed and are deformed, and millions died as a result of the vaccination. He's not allowed into any parts of those nations as a result of it. The cases are still pending in the World Court against the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation as a result of the slaughter of millions. But I think I need to put a little footnote on that parenthetical statement to that footnote as a footnote. Bill Gates is a eugenist. Bill Gates believes we need to reduce the number on a global basis of about 150 million people. Bill Gates sees that as being a positive for a vaccination is to reduce the population around the globe. So, Dr. Grable, are you saying to our listeners, are you wanting us to understand, going back to the fundamentals of what we're saying, there's a super danger in the with the potential harm for taking the vaccination? If that is the case, and I think that's what I've heard you say, what are the recommendations? I don't want to give medical advice to anybody on the air. Don't want them to say, well, I'm not going to take it because that young blood character said don't. But at the same time, I believe that our citizenry, the listeners, need to be informed as to the potential of what's going into our bodies if we take the vaccination. Is that what we're talking about?
Well, you know, for medical legal reasons, I'm not going to recommend pro or con for the vaccine.
Right.
But I think the key is, as you educate people, they are fully able to make up their own mind. So let's use the flu vaccine as an example. So I'll have somebody come to me and they'll say, Dr. Grable, should I get the flu shot? And I'll say, well, okay, I recommend that you get the flu shot if you understand the following. There's less than a 20% chance it's going to be effective. It's going to weaken your immune system for a period of time. We're not really sure, days, weeks, months. You're going to shed the virus, so you're going to be a danger to those around you for a period of time. You're exposing yourself up to 27 toxic chemicals and heavy metals, and you are also introducing retroviruses that the virus has been grown on in the cell culture. Now, if you're okay with all those things, then I would say get your flu shot. And, of course, usually people sit there, they start chuckling, and they kind of get the message. You know, as a doctor who loves homeopathy, I'm not anti-vaccine in its purest sense. If we could have a vaccine that was a small part of a bacteria, virus, what have you, and it was put in sterile water and it stimulated the body to create a reaction or defense against that organism, I would be leading the charge. I would be standing out in the front of the line with a banner saying we should be doing this. The problem is that doctors haven't studied this at all, and they are completely misled about vaccines, what they do, and their risks. And the autoimmune, you touched on this. This is one of the things that scares us. There has been an explosion, an absolute explosion, and I don't use those words loosely, in this country that conventional doctors are scratching their heads. We're looking at autoimmunity, diabetes, on and on and on, all these different autoimmune conditions, and they can't really figure out why. Well, if you look at vaccines, and if I could just explain this briefly,
yes.
Hopefully I won't lose your audience.
Oh, no, go ahead.
You hear this term about herd immunity, which I happen to subscribe to. All right?
Yes, I do.
So you've got two parts to your immune system. You've got what's called the cell-mediated immunity, and you've got the antibody system, all right? The first one is Th1. That's your Pac-Man. So when you're exposed to a virus or a bacteria, your cell-mediated immunity goes into effect. They're like little Pac-Men. They go around gobbling up the bad guys, and then they tell your Th2 antibody system, hey, you need to kick into gear, make some antibodies, so that we can fully get rid of this, and then in the future we'll be protected. So when you get an infection, you kick in your cell-mediated immunity, which then typically, with that, with the antibodies, gives you that lifelong herd immunity. That is what happened with all those infectious diseases that I was talking about earlier in our discussion, where the incidence of the disease was virtually down to zero because of the natural immunity that's occurred. Now, when you give somebody a vaccine, what you're doing is you're injecting a compound in which bypasses the cell-mediated, God-given Pac-Man immunity, and it goes right to Th2. The kicker is that that protein or whatever you've injected stays in the system, and the body continually manufactures antibodies. And this is the problem with autoimmunity, is that your body, in a confusion attempt to get rid of this boogeyman, starts attacking your own tissues. And we have no idea what injecting this messenger RNA vaccine, which, by the way, has never been done, is completely new. Are we going to start vaccinating 7 billion people on this planet because of 160 cases that were found out of 44,000 people? It is, to me, it is absolutely absurd. And I, for myself, I can speak for myself, there is no way that I will get this.
Dr. Grable, you just spoke of the overproduction of the immune system. Would that be very much like what you'd call the term CML, chronic myelogenic leukemia, which is referred to as the Philadelphia syndrome, where your immune system overreacts, the white cells overproduce, and can cause ultimate death? Is that very similar to that, what you're saying?
You know, to be honest with you, Doc, I've never read where CML is an autoimmune condition, but you know, it is a chronic, those chronic leukemias can smolder for a long time, and so they don't really seem to fit in that acute leukemia pattern. But there's a whole host of autoimmune. You've got lupus, you've got, there were two cases of transverse myelitis with the AstraZeneca vaccine. And normally, if you get two neurologic events, that usually puts the kibosh on the vaccine. Well, the company buried the second one.
Yes.
And transverse myelitis can be a very severe, lifelong, kind of put you in the wheelchair type problem. And see, none of this gets discussed on the news. That's what really frosts me, is that we are not getting the complete picture. We get the sound bite, oh, the Pfizer vaccine is 90% effective, and everybody's runs up with their arms extended, you know, give me the vaccine. And I just shake my head going, you have no idea what you're doing.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm looking at a report that is part of the Pfizer clinical trials where several of the participants suffered what's called Bell palsy, which generally is temporary paralysis, but some of them did not recuperate after 48 hours, 72 hours. And the Pfizer response was that, well, between 6 months and a year, you should be over it. And yet they don't know that. There's not not a certainty in that. There's nothing that's causing... that causes me to think that that's wonderful. You might have paralysis or a major problem for 6 or 8 months, then it'd be gone, but it could also be deadly. In fact, the thing that is bothersome to me is that from a societal standpoint, we're being caused to believe that somehow, some way, as you said, we need to all rush in, line up, get our sleeves up, and accept the stab in the arm, as Alan what's his name? The constitutionalist says that we need to, Dershowitz, Alan Dershowitz says everybody should be forced by the government to go ahead and take the vaccine. There are a lot of people today that are lining up in their cars to go out and get the COVID test, not realizing the tests are absolutely filled with frailties and false reports. So that gets me to the question, Dr. Grable. Have we increased the problem in America with COVID-19 as a result of masks and lockdowns? Have we caused the problem that we're now faced with more than anything else?
Absolutely. I read Judy Mikovits wrote an entire book on just masks. And the retired neurosurgeon Russ Blaylock has videos and newsletters on masks and how not only do they really not prevent transmission, but they're actually harmful. And if you, you know, time-wise, we don't really have time to go into detail, but your breath, both what you breathe in and what you breathe out, goes up and down and sideways and behind you from the mask. And the mask does not totally block virus. So what happens is you're breathing, if you measure the oxygen level behind the mask, it is less than the OSHA standards for safety. And you are breathing 100 times the amount of carbon dioxide that is normally in the air. And there have been studies showing that at about an hour, healthcare workers, their oxygen levels start to drop. And in surgeons, at about 4 hours, not only do they become, their oxygen levels drop, but it starts to affect their brain function. And that's kind of scary.
And yet we have merchants and professionals, doctors' offices and otherwise, that's forcing their employees to wear the mask. In fact, I told a clerk recently in one of the stores that I was in that you need to get a group of the employees together and file a class action suit against your employer for forcing you to wear the mask, which is ultimately destroying your health. Doctor, hold on a minute. I believe we have a call on the line. Go with your question or comment, please.
Hi, Dr. Youngblood. It's Maria. How are you?
Hey, Maria. Good.
I was calling in to just give two things that I have found myself. I've read an article on LifeSite, SiteNews.com today, where a whistleblower has come out and has alleged that there is feces and urine on the floors of the manufacturing plants that create vaccines because they're unable to take breaks, and ungowning to go to the restroom takes 15 minutes since they're in a sterilized environment. So where they're creating these vaccines, not only is the vaccines not worth taking, but there's feces and urine on the floor of those places that they're doing that. And also, I'd like the listeners to do their own research, because the Pfizer vaccine has a ingredient, or whatever you want to call it, in it. It's MRC-5. And if you go to Google and type that in, the first thing that comes up is Wikipedia. And when you click on it, MRC-5 is from the developed lung tissue of a 14-week-old aborted Caucasian male. Then they found this in 1966. So not only is there dead aborted fetus cells in the vaccine, it's also been cloned, because how do you keep something since 1966 and keep taking parts from a 14-week-old aborted baby? So you're going to have a clone aborted baby's cells in your vaccine. And that's all I had to say for today.
Interesting. Thank you for calling, Maria. Dr. Grable, would you like to respond to that, or do you have any insight on that statement?
I don't, but I appreciate the caller bringing that to light. There, you know, in these vaccines, most people are not aware of all the junk that is in there. If you, there's a name, Sherry Tenpenny is a DO up in Toledo, and Sherry's been studying vaccines for 20 years. She's spent over 40,000 hours, so she's really an authority. And she's put out these little brochures about cow parts and chicken parts and all this stuff that if you start to understand, and of course, you know, aborted fetal parts and so forth, it would really frighten you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Dr. Stephen Grable. Dr. Grable, we've got a few more minutes, but I want you to go ahead at this juncture. Tell our listeners about your practice, what you do, how they can reach you, and why it is so vital for we the people to recognize the dangers of this vaccine, and that there are other avenues by which health can be maintained other than by the chemicals that can be injected into the system.
Sure. Well, let me just state something that now this is just my practice. But I have had zero patients in the hospital with COVID. I had one who was seriously ill, who we turned around with two IV ozone treatments. And I have written maybe 5 to 10 hydroxychloroquine scripts. The rest of my patients, as far as I know, are fine, because I've had them do the following. Now, you know, this I give this general recommendation of what I do and what I recommend for my own patients, but I have them take 5,000 units of vitamin A and 5,000 units of vitamin D3 daily. I have them take vitamin C twice a day and 30 milligrams or so of zinc. So I have them do those four things. And I've got some other things that I use as well, but the key, in my view, is to keep your immune system strong. And that's kind of a microcosm of how I practice, is when someone sees me, I'm searching for where their imbalances are, whether it is emotional, physical, spiritual, or all three of the above, and what we can do to try to get those things into balance. Because God has made it, where, as the good book says, we're fearfully, wonderfully made, right?
Amen.
And so our bodies have a tremendous ability to heal. And I'll tell you something, the COVID virus is all over the place. It's in the aerosol. Some experts think it stays for days, weeks, indefinitely. It's an illusion that you're not exposed. So the key, in my opinion, is to keep your immune system strong. And if you do that, I think the vast majority of people will be just fine.
Let our listeners know about your practice and website or telephone number for them to contact you if they feel impressed to do so.
Sure. My website is drgrable, that's drgrable.com. And the phone number here is 904-247-7455. And so you can contact us. We have you fill out a rather extensive questionnaire, which I go through carefully, so we really analyze your body carefully. I do conventional tests as well as holistic type testing. So the more information I have on a patient, the better I can help them.
Amen. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with Dr. Stephen Grable today, and I pray that you have been educated, informed, challenged about the potentiality of the vaccine for this virus and what God would have you to do in relationship to a positive or negative response to it. Dr. Grable, thank you so much for joining us today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Let's Face the Issues. Looking forward to meeting you next time as, once again, we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located 1/2 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 9:45 p.m., for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard in its entirety 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM and 93.3 HD3. You're also invited to tune in Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. on Talk 100.3 for expository preaching. Tune in and invite others to listen.